ever wonder what a vegan actually is?
They say cows are bad for the environment because all they do is eat plants and fart. Just like vegans.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday. Chinese students in the United States are often legally required by their home country to provide intelligence back to the Chinese Communist Party. Should ICE begin deporting these students to protect national security? I thought we'd put that question to our friend Frank Gaffney, president of the Institute for the American Future and author of number one best-selling book on Amazon in the category, The Indictment, Prosecuting the Chinese Communist Party and its friends for crimes against America, China, and the world. Frank, welcome back.
It's great to be with you, Lars. Thank you.
Tell me this. In some ways, aren't we contributing to the moral hazard that we put students in if we say we're going to admit Chinese national students to go to our universities, and we know that back at home they have not just a legal responsibility to bring things back for the Chinese Communist Party, but we also know that the Chinese government is not beyond, you know, say, threatening the family of that student. So if you let them in, you're either, acknowledging that they're going to steal information and take it back to benefit the Chinese Communist Party, or their families are going to be threatened, and that's morally questionable, isn't it?
I believe that this is a huge problem on multiple levels, as you say, Lars. For one thing, it's a threat to the national security of the United States that you've got, by some estimates, 270,000 of these young people who are obliged under the laws of China to do whatever the Chinese Communist Party tells them to do. And by the way, they've all been selected by the Chinese communists to come to the United States. They don't get in because they're, you know, dissidents or going to waver. And if there is any question as to whether they're going to do what they're told, there is now apparently some number, and we don't know quite the number, but some number, more than one, of these so-called overseas Chinese police service centers that are intended to keep these guys in line, not least, you mentioned the families back home, by bringing them in, and they're on a big screen in the service center, as they call it. You're likely to see your grandmother or some other loved one from China who is in the not-so-tender company of the Chinese authorities. And the message is very clear. You will do what you're told, or something bad is going to happen to your family. So that's a moral hazard, yes, but it's more than that. It's creating, I think, real threats to the nation. And, you know, this came up recently in connection with the Trump administration telling Harvard, you're going to, you know, have to get rid of those foreign students. Not get rid of them, but have them transfer. You're not going to get visas for more of them. And this should be, it seems to me, the opening salvo in a corrective that is long, long overdue, because these Chinese nationals, I think, are ticking time bombs, perhaps more than just collecting intelligence, by the way. I mean, if it happens that the Chinese party says, blow up that local transformer in the U.S. grid, well, they have to do that, too. Oh,
and
that
is very
serious stuff.
Yeah, if they don't, they're violating the law. So when they go back home, it's not going to be a friendly reentry to their home country, and they're putting their families at risk. That's an untenable situation, and we're participating in it by allowing them to come in, go to our universities, and then be obliged to steal information to take back to China. So I don't even see a way to solve that other than saying, then you're not welcome to be here.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's the only solution, and it's not a happy one, and especially for these universities who charge full freight to these Chinese students. Many of them are coming from wealthy families who, you know, can afford to pay the full fare, no scholarships for them. But another piece of this, Lars, that shouldn't be overlooked is they're not coming here to study, English literature or American history. They're here to learn hard sciences, and I think you can't get around it. They're going to take it back, and they're going to use it against us. That's what this so-called civil-military fusion in China is all about. Even if they don't go to work for the People's Liberation Army directly, any job they're going to get that takes advantage of what they've learned here in the way of chemistry or engineering or physics, and the like, is going to be applied to a commercial enterprise, which also works for the Chinese Communist Party and also is responsible for, you know, building the military might of China. And what is that military might going to be used for, Lars? It's going to be used for their efforts to destroy the United States and seek world domination. That's what the Chinese Communist Party does.
Well, see, and for all the people who advocate for this, you know, let the students in. We've got the best universities in the world because they'll stay and go to work, say, for a high-tech company. I mean, there's constantly this claim that you might be telling the person to go home who's going to come up with the next cure for cancer or the next innovation in some field. The problem is if they leave that university with that freshly minted PhD and say go to work for an American tech company, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, that says if they work for the tech company for 5 years or a decade and then return to China, they're not going to return with all that knowledge in their head, not just from the university, but also from working for the, with the tech company here. And all of that goes back to China, too.
Well, of course. I mean, this is not just a hypothetical. It happens a lot. And sometimes they get caught. Sometimes the companies only figure it out after they've returned to China with essentially a motherload of proprietary information. But Lars, that law that we were talking about isn't a law that applies to students. It's a law that applies to Chinese nationals. And by the way, those overseas police service centers go after first-generation Americans in yep. some cases, as well as Chinese nationals. So this is, again, whether they leave with the knowledge that they get from us in our academic institutions or they leave with the proprietary information they get from working for our companies, it's, again, I'm afraid, ticking time bombs, and I think we have to be done with it in a time when the Chinese are making no secret about their intent to destroy us, the Chinese Communist Party, that is.
And by the way, Frank, I was going to mention to you, we do a week of broadcasts at Hoover, which is the conservative institution on the Stanford campus every year. And one of the publications there is the Hoover conservative paper on campus. And they broke a story, I think about 2 weeks ago now, and we talked about it. And it had a person impersonating a Stanford student who was befriending mostly young ladies and saying to them, who were focusing on China studies, saying, why don't you go visit China? It would be very enlightening and all that. Oh, and by the way, I'll buy your airline ticket. And they suspected that he was perhaps working for one of those outfits. And whether he was approaching first-gen Chinese kids at the Stanford campus or otherwise, the point is that he was trying to get them to go to China, saying, go over, you know, stay a couple of days and then come back and I'll pay the freight. I suspect that that person was working on behalf of the Chinese government as well. That's Frank Gaffney. Frank, thank you very much. By the way, just in, Planned Parenthood CEO compensation, you know, that organization that kills almost 500,000 babies every year, paid its CEO almost $1 million last year. And some of that money was taxpayer dollars that helped fund it. Planned Parenthood is big abortion business that profits off baby killing. We have to stop Planned Parenthood. And I have just the team to make it happen. Join me in supporting Americans United for Life. Since their beginnings in 1970, AUL has been involved in every pro-life case presented before the Supreme Court. Their top-tier legal professionals are dedicated to defending life and protecting the unborn. AUL played a critical role in the legal strategy that contributed to overturning Roe, and now they're focused on exposing Planned Parenthood and closing those abortion centers permanently. Americans United for Life has helped save over 3 million kids. I'm looking for 50 pro-life listeners to donate $50 a month to stop this madness. Your tax-deductible donation saves the lives of babies and advances pro-life legislation nationwide. Your help is critical. Donate securely at AUL.org/Lars. That's AUL.org/Lars. Protect those lives and support Americans United for Life. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
And At least someone has a plan for illegal aliens.
Back in the White House, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, yesterday, Dan Bongino, who was once a Secret Service agent, now is deputy director of the FBI, has announced that they're going after three unsolved mysteries in recent political history. And as far as I'm concerned, I want the Trump administration to deliver on the things it has promised to deliver. I want them to go after Hillary Clinton. I want them on the crimes that she committed. I want them to go after the unnamed and unprosecuted clients of Jeffrey Epstein, the late Jeffrey Epstein, who I still believe was killed and did not commit suicide. But Bongino has announced that he and Director Kash Patel have decided to reopen or push additional resources toward the cocaine found in the West Wing during the Biden administration. I am less concerned about that than I am about Epstein and also the leak of the draft of the Supreme Court opinion that overturned Roe v. Wade. Less concerned about that. We know what the decision was now. Would it be important to fire the person who actually leaked it? They're probably gone already. Clerks to Supreme Court justices usually last for a couple, 3 years, and then they go off to very well-paid jobs elsewhere. But I'm less concerned about that kind of thing than I am about the more consequential things that ought to be investigated, including things that we were told were on the desk of Kash Patel and on the desk of the Attorney General. And they're not being revealed to the public, and none of us understands why. I told you that I would reserve the right when I disagree with President Trump to tell you what I disagree about. I think there are more serious things that ought to be investigated, and I think people should be prosecuted if they were involved in the leaks, if they were involved in the cover-ups. They ought to be prosecuted, even especially if they are still in the government, but even if they're not. To your calls now. If you want to jump into the best conversation and talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And we always put naysayers first. So, Joy, you are just such a naysayer. What do you and I disagree about today that makes you one?
Well, I just don't see any connection between, for example, what you were talking to Frank about in terms of Chinese international students and what Trump is doing attacking Harvard. They're taking this huge, broad swipe at Harvard, probably because Trump didn't get into Harvard when he applied in 1964, but a lot of the
you think he's holding a grudge from 1964, as successful as he was going to Wharton?
Oh, I'm sure he is. He holds grudges forever. Oh, my gosh. But I think that what he's doing actually ends up harming the American people quite a bit. And it does not have the specificity of what you were talking to Frank about.
Well, except that I'd given, Joy, let me give you the three things that Trump cites directly in the letter he sent to Harvard. So this is what it's actually about. Racial discrimination. Joy, have we all heard Harvard admit that they have racially discriminated against students? They have told students who are, for example, Asian American and Asians who get better test scores but are denied entry and then give admission to students who are Hispanic or black who are not as academically prepared. Should we have any taxpayer dollars going to an institution that discriminates against or in favor of people based on their race?
Well, you correct those problems. The trouble is
Harvard has to do that. The students at Harvard have already gone to court and said, we want the university is well aware of the issue, Joy. And they're well aware that they tell black kids, you don't need the same test scores as white kids or Asian kids to get in.
So Harvard
needs to correct it. Tell me why they won't.
Well, admission it's an art, not a science. But I'm just
I think that's hogwash.
The steps that he is taking, one is a complete overkill, but it's not getting to the problems like Frank is talking about. Instead, you have Trump.
Well, that's a different. Well, but Joy, you're ignoring. There's a different initiative that Trump has undertaken, and that is to cut off the foreign visas for students to come to Harvard. And he. No, hold on, hold on. These are two different issues, although they both focus on Harvard. Donald Trump has said, I want to cut off the visas. Now, imagine this. You're a young Chinese national living in China. You want to go to school in America. Please wait. You only get to go to school if the government says so. And the law in China says any information you get access to, you are required to provide back to the government of China, either now or when you return. Doesn't that put the kid in an impossible situation, saying that he's being turned into a spy to steal information and bring it back to benefit China? Some of them may actually feel patriotic about it. I'm going to go to Harvard. I'm going to soak up information.
Can I respond?
Yeah, answer that, please.
There's 700 Chinese international students out of 7,100 international students at Harvard. Many of them are graduate students.
You're not answering the question. If they're required by their government that gave them permission to come to Harvard.
You're going to have to get to it, Joy. You target the Chinese students. Why say that 7,000 of these international students are not able to come to Harvard?
Then you get back to the specific things Trump has said. Racial discrimination by Harvard. Anti-Semitism allowed and even encouraged by Harvard, and violations of federal law. Why should they get a dime of our money?
Because who's getting hurt is that when the government funds research, medical research, scientific research, technological research, the government, that is then something they can share with the rest of the United States. I mean, if you look at the iPhone, if you look at a lot of...
The iPhone was developed by a private company, but Joy, I want to know the answer to one simple question, Joy. If you're having engineering and scientific work done at Harvard, is Harvard the only place in America that can do that work?
They have resources, they have professors, they have links to an equivalent of Silicon Valley in the Boston area.
So does Stanford. So does Yale. So does Columbia. You can't even answer a simple question, Joy. I asked you, if you say we should have this research done by somebody, could it be done by a private company? Yes. Could it be done by at least a couple of dozen other universities? Yes. Then why do we have to give it to an anti-Semitic racist institution like Harvard? But Joy, you're an interesting naysayer. Hey, if something were to happen tomorrow, are you ready for it? A new virus or maybe a shortage, a supply chain collapse, whatever it is, your health cannot wait. And that's exactly why I want to tell you about All Family Pharmacy. It's a pharmacy that puts you in number one spot. They're on a mission to make America healthy again, helping families like yours stay stocked up and ready with the medications they need close at hand. They're not just selling medication, they're standing up for medical freedom and making sure Americans have access to the treatments they choose. While others are blocking access, All Family Pharmacy makes it available. They've got ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, methylene blue, mebendazole, antibiotics, even everyday meds, 200 medications available. And it's easy. No insurance, no hassle. Just go online, work with a licensed doctor who handles the prescription. The meds ship right to your front door. If you'd rather be stocked up than caught off guard, this is the option for you. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use my code Lars10 for 10% off. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and code Lars10. Take control of your health. My broadcast brothers, although I really don't like the association, but NPR, National Public Radio, is running off to court because Donald Trump said, I'm going to pull the plug on your taxpayer funding, which for decades I have said we should not be funding media through the government. Now, other countries do that, have done that. The old Soviet Union had TASS, and I think China had the Xinhua News Agency. They were state-controlled media, and so is NPR and PBS, and they shouldn't be soaking up taxpayer cash, and I'm glad to see Donald Trump threaten it. But now they're claiming They have a First Amendment right to that cash. So I thought we'd consult with Thomas DiLorenzo, who's president of the Mises Institute. I read their email on a daily basis. He's the author of Hamilton's Curse, How Jefferson's Arch Enemy Betrayed the American Revolution and What It Means for Americans Today. We'll have to talk about that another time. But Thomas, welcome back.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be back.
So tell me this. So NPR is going to court, and the essence of their argument is that they have a First Amendment right to taxpayer cash to fund their medium?
Yeah, right. Well, I'm the president of a nonprofit organization, an economic research organization, the Mises Institute. And we speak very freely, and we criticize the government all the time in our website, in our books, in our publications, our conferences. And we have never received one single penny from the government. And what do you know? It's possible after all. And, you know, if NPR and PBS produce such great products, they should really have no problem attracting investors and advertising revenue on the free market. And, you know, good luck to them if they want to do that. And, you know, they were created by legislation in 1967 basically to be a propaganda organ for Lyndon Johnson and the so-called Great Society.
Yep.
And they've been just another propaganda arm of the Democrat Party ever since. And so there's no reason why they need to be subsidized by you and me and other working people. And their argument about the Constitution and free speech is laughable, because it is the existence of NPR and PBS that is unconstitutional. There's nothing in the delegated powers of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, that allows for state-run propaganda along the lines of the Soviet Union. And it's those of us who have genuinely free speech rights who have to oppose them day in after day out if we disagree with them. But it's an unfair fight, because they get taxpayer dollars for their broadcast, and we don't. And so and one other point I'd like to make is that it's patently un-American. You know, Thomas Jefferson once said that to compel a man to contribute to a cause with which he disagrees is sinful and tyrannical. And he of course wasn't referring to NPR. This is Thomas Jefferson, but it's true. It's true. It's corrupt,
yep.
and it's sinful and tyrannical.
Well, I agree with you, and sorry about mispronouncing the name, but I've been reading the emails that your organization sends out every single day, and I enjoy them, and I enjoy the point of view of the Mises Institute. And this is what bothers me, Tom, is I've always worked in for-profit journalism, and I've always wondered out loud, oftentimes to friends of mine who worked for PBS or NPR from time to time. I said, why do you need to have the taxpayers' money? And they said, well, we wouldn't exist without it. And I said, well, then if you wouldn't exist without it, you don't deserve to exist. I said, if I have a successful radio show, and I do, it's because we have people who listen and advertisers who support that. And if the day becomes that I become objectionable in a whole bunch of ways, then we lose that support and the show goes away. I mean, that's a very simple equation, and it's a very small d democratic way to decide, is this medium worthy? A lot of newspapers are finding out they're not worthy in today's day and age. Too bad. Change or adapt to the circumstances or get out of town. As far as I'm concerned, yeah. And I'll apply the same thing to myself, Mr. DiLorenzo. If someday I can't hold an audience by the interesting things I say or don't say, then I deserve to get out of the business as well, and they should too.
Yeah. Well, they don't believe in that because they're basically all socialists, and so they resent even hearing that kind of argument about economic reality. And I was a university economics professor for decades. And when I would give talks to either students or in public about free market economics and how the market works, there would always be some small group that's actually offended by hearing the truth about markets. And I would bet that the average NPR employee is like that, and that they think they're entitled to our tax dollars. It's not in the Constitution to have a state-run media.
Nope.
But there is a document that does. Is consistent with NPR and PBS, and that's the Communist Manifesto. You know, item is a 10 planks in the Communist Manifesto. Plank number 6 says centralization of the means of communication in the hands of the state, and these two organizations have gone a long way towards centralizing communication in the hands of the state, along with the Federal Communications Commission. You know, during the Roosevelt era, FDR era. There was almost no opposition on radio to the New Deal in the road under Roosevelt, because the Federal Communications Commission would either withdraw your license or you wouldn't get a license in the first place to have a radio station. And so and these two institutions have gone a long way toward achieving this goal of the Communist Manifesto, of all things, and centralization of the means of communication in the hands of the state.
You know, it's funny, Thomas, because over the years, I've heard liberals all the time will say, well, you can't trust that study on oil because it's done by an oil company. You can't trust that study on X because it's paid for by the X industry, whatever that is. And I ask my friends, you know, who've worked in that industry, well, how can I trust the reporting on government by a media organization that's actually funded in large part by the government? That's Thomas DiLorenzo, president of the Mises Institute. Mr. DiLorenzo, thanks so much for your time. He's the author of Hamilton's Curse, How Jefferson's Arch Enemy Betrayed the American Revolution and What It Means for Americans Today. Hey, I've got a little piece of news for you about lean. Lean is something I've tried myself, and it doesn't happen very often, so you want to jump on this. Brickhouse Nutrition's Memorial Day sale is on. For a limited time, save 25% on everything with my code MEMORIAL25. That includes Lean, the weight loss supplement with the same target goals of those GLP-1 injections, but without the needles and without a prescription. People are seeing real results, and they love that it curbs the cravings. Check out the website reviews. Also on sale, Field of Greens, the superfruit and nutrition vegetable drink that literally promises your doctor will see the improvement in your health or you get your money back. Whether it's collagen, creatine, or any of their other doctor-formulated products, it's all on sale for 25% off. Kick off a healthy summer and save big while you're at it. Go to BrickHouseNutrition.com and use code MEMORIAL25 for 25% off. Don't wait. The sale's only on for a few days. That's BrickHouseNutrition.com. BrickHouseNutrition.com and use code MEMORIAL25 for 25% off. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. Podcast, download, or stream this program, and you can always tell Alexa to play the Lars Larsen Show.
The Lars Larsen Show.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
Lars. Real Red Meat Radio.
I mean, that's a special kind of stupid.
This is the Lars Larsen Show.
I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly, provocative talk radio.
What I say is what I say. And honestly, if you don't like it, I'm sorry.
Lars.
Oh, boys, I'm back.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
No, here's your host.
Wait a minute, I'm talking now, if you don't mind, please.
Lars Larsen.
Welcome back to the Lars Larsen Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday after Memorial Day weekend. And we've got some great news to report. Remember, I was just thinking a moment ago, remember how over the last 4 years, almost on a daily basis, the daily number of illegal crossings into America was being reported because during the 4 sad years of the Biden administration, those numbers went from hundreds a day to thousands a day to more than 10,000 people a day. Do you know where they are now? They're nowhere near that. The numbers have gone down so hard that a soft-sided migrant processing facility in San Diego that was built under the Biden administration has now been dismantled because in the San Diego sector, which was a heavy sector for illegal crossings, the number of illegal crossings is down by the actual numbers 96% this year over last year, the last full calendar year of the Biden administration, 96%. And I want to tell you about some of the people who are crossing that border today or trying to cross, but they are being arrested and taken into custody instead. And you can imagine the kind of damage that America is avoiding by having these people go into custody instead of being turned loose on the American public, the way the Biden administration liked to turn loose convicted criminals, accused criminals, members of various gangs from various foreign countries like Trinidad and Aragua, folks like that. But first, welcome to the Lars Larsen Show. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, that is you disagree with me on something, we'll put you right to the front of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. Oh, and by the way, there is the X poll. Every single day, we make up a new X poll question of the day based on the news of the day. Should federal funding to elite colleges support trade schools around America instead? Now, think about this. We've made up this question. President Donald Trump announced yesterday he is considering taking $3 billion of already awarded grant money for scientific and engineering research at Harvard University. Take that $3 billion that has been promised to Harvard, take it back, and give it to the trade schools. In other words, create many, many more young Americans who can go out and build things in America. Folks who become the folks who frame houses and buildings, the folks who pour the concrete, the folks who do the electrical, the plumbing, the HVAC, and all the other work that it takes to build America. Imagine $3 billion instead of going into a really sick institution like Harvard. And the reason that Trump says he's taking the money away, he says racial discrimination, and it had actually been institutionalized at Harvard University to the point where they would say, we're not going to take that kid. If that kid was black, if the kid was Hispanic, those scores would get him in. The kid is white. Nope, you don't get in. Oh, Asian? Nope, too many of those. We're not going to let you in. In other words, Harvard acted openly and notoriously as a racist institution with the racism baked right into the cake. They allowed anti-Semitism. That is, they allowed Jewish students on campus to be attacked, to be barred access to the campus. And they violated federal law. So if you've got an institution like that that is gobbling up taxpayer money by the billions, and you could take that money away from Harvard and give it to the trade schools instead and have many, many more young Americans prepared to go out into the world to build things, not a degree in ethnic studies or transgender studies or a DEI management degree. No, an actual degree in which you can actually do something. And what he said on True Social is that he may take that $3 billion from Harvard and put it where it'll actually make a difference. So should federal funding to elite colleges support trade schools instead? I'd answer that one yes. You can answer it any way you like. It's brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC has the conservative values I believe in. I joined the group a long time ago, almost a decade ago. You should too. Just go to amac.us or call 888-262-2006. AMAC is better. Better for you and better for America. Now, in yesterday's poll, we got kind of a split decision. Are you satisfied with the big, beautiful bill currently waiting for approval by the U.S. Senate, the one that would keep the tax cuts from 2017, the one that would make so many other great changes, and the impact on the deficit? I didn't answer that one, no. I'm not satisfied. It does not cut government, not nearly enough, and it's certainly not as in keeping with the kind of promises that Donald Trump made, but this is the Congress doing it, not Donald Trump. Don't confuse the two. There are too many people who say, well, the president spent all this money. You know, under our U.S. Constitution, the president can't spend dime one without the approval of Congress. So 56% of you voted no. I voted on the no side of that one. Only 44% of you said yes. I do want to mention this. A thought to a man you've heard on this show before, Phil Robertson, the founder of Duck Commander and the star of A&E's Duck Dynasty, passed away this past weekend. It was confirmed by his family yet on Sunday. Known for his unapologetic Christian faith, and God bless him for that, Robertson had been suffering from multiple health conditions, including Alzheimer's. You have heard him on this show before. We will remember him fondly, and we very much appreciate Mr. Robertson having come on this program. But glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Naysayers to the head of the line, and of course, the X-Poll as well. Now, in addition to reducing the flow over America's southern border by 96%, as an example, in the San Diego sector, consider just over this past weekend the illegal aliens taken into custody. Kevin Estuarte Hernandez, an 18-year-old from Guatemala, arrested in Boston, a member of the 18th Street gang, involved in a shooting between his gang and the MS-13 gang. Jose Antonio Deras, a 45-year-old illegal alien from El Salvador, arrested in Denver, pending four felony counts of sexual assault on a child. A judge had ordered him removed from our country in 2009. He came back. And that list goes on, and that is just one weekend. By the way, Planned Parenthood CEO, you know, the one who runs the organization that kills almost 500,000 babies every year, paid the CEO almost $1 million, and some of it was taxpayer money. Planned Parenthood is big abortion business that profits off killing babies. We have to stop Planned Parenthood. I have the team to make it happen. Join me in supporting Americans United for Life. Since their beginnings in 1970, AUL has been involved in every pro-life case before the U.S. Supreme Court. Their top-tier lawyers are dedicated to defending life and protecting the unborn. AUL played a critical role in the legal strategy that overturned Roe v. Wade, and now they're focused on exposing Planned Parenthood and closing abortion centers permanently. Americans United for Life has helped save over 3 million children, and they're leading the charge in the post-Roe era. I'm looking for 50 pro-life listeners to donate $50 a month to stop the madness. Your tax-deductible donation saves babies' lives and advances pro-life causes nationwide. Your help is critical. Donate securely at AUL.org/Lars. That's AUL.org/Lars. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
And now, this musical message to anyone who wants to indoctrinate our school children.
Hey, teacher, leave the kids alone.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails in a moment. Well, President Trump's budget slashes science funding like never before, cutting research, environmental programs, and public health down to size. Is that smart spending or a disaster waiting to happen? I have a feeling I know where Dr. Henry Miller is going to go on this. Doc is a medical doctor, molecular biologist. He's currently at the American Council on Science and Health. Dr. Miller, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Lars. Thank you.
Henry, am I right in guessing that you don't like these cuts to science funding? And then we have to get into the question of whether or not science funded by the government is not already a bit problematic.
Well, you know the old expression, Lars, about throwing the baby out with the bathwater?
Yes.
This budget that's proposed by the administration is sort of like throwing out not only the baby, but the baby's five siblings and 13 cousins. It's gutting important research agencies. Apparently, by Elon Musk's munchkins at Doge, who don't understand the importance of basic research or how some of these agencies operate, it is not good for the nation or for American science.
But do they own some of the reputation that came along with it? I mean, in the same way, Henry, that if I watch somebody spending money on behalf of his family or on behalf of his company or his organization, and I saw him spending on some foolish things, am I free to believe that, well, maybe he makes bad decisions about how to spend money? And you say, well, that's not all he spent money on. He also spent some money on some worthy things as well. Yes, but the decisions that I can see and the ones that gained a lot of attention suggested that a lot of America, maybe it wasn't even the majority of the money, was being spent foolishly. Then why should we trust the rest of those results?
Well, you know,
you see that logic?
There's supposed to be oversight of how these things are spent.
By whom?
By effective managers. You get rid of the managers and you make them live on a budget that is reasonable and that gets rid of DEI and gets rid of a lot of nonsensical social spending. But you can't cut the NIH $48 billion budget by $21 billion and expect that it's going to be done intelligently damage.
Dr. Miller, let me point out that until Trump came along in his first term, and I've told people there are things I disagree with Trump about, and I say so. But in his first term, he wanted to make it possible to fire federal employees who weren't doing their jobs, whether it was at the VA or anywhere else. Before that, we had decades where the law effectively said you can't fire people even when they're doing their job badly. And that's where you could prove they were doing their job badly. And now more recently, when Trump has tried to fire people, you've had federal courts come in and say, no, you may be the head of the executive branch, but you can't fire people. So when you say you should have effective management from people, well, most of the reason that people are effective in managing their jobs is because they know there's a consequence if they don't. Well, if they find out over the decades, there is no effective consequence because you can't be fired. Some of them will go out and go crazy and do stupid things saying, I'm doing this stuff, and people may disagree, but they can't fire me.
Well, but you, I agree that you have to be able to fire people. You know, I've written about some of the idiocy that I encountered at FDA.
You've talked about it here.
Yeah, I've talked about it here. One elderly secretary who would give me phone messages such as so-and-so called phone number 235-547. A six-digit phone number, and I'd say, Mary, this isn't a complete phone number, and she'd say, "That's what they gave me." Tom Frieden, the former CDC director, I think said it very well recently. He said, "You don't improve things by destroying them; you improve them by improving them." And there hasn't been a systematic effort to weed out the bad and emphasize the good in these budgets. And look, I'm for cutting some of these, even research entirely at some agencies. EPA has not done good research over the years. And I've written about that and I've complained about that. And goodbye, Office of Research and Development at EPA. And goodbye to much of what's claimed to be research at the Department of Education.
You mean like putting sand fleas on the eyes of beagles and things like that?
Well, I can't judge what the purpose of that experiment was.
Shrimp on treadmills? Was there? If you used your wildest scientific imagination, could you imagine a reason to put shrimp on treadmills?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really.
And I guess what I'm wondering, Doc, is when you've got an institution, and this can't be a secret. I mean, the first time some scientist says, hey, you know what Henry's doing down the hall? He's got shrimp on treadmills underwater. You would think that the word would go out and say, okay, whoever signed off on that, you're gone. Unfireable people are tough to manage. But how do you manage it when the institution just seems to nod and go, yeah, I know, sand fleas on eyeballs, shrimp on treadmills. Okay, whatever. We fund everything. Because it seemed to be when the whole institution buys into it and nobody within the scientific community, within those institutions, is raising a hue and cry saying, we're spending money on stupid stuff instead of the important stuff.
Well, but it's not all stupid stuff, and that's the important thing. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, innovation doesn't come from government-supported research. It comes from companies. It comes from Apple.
And individuals.
And individuals.
Because otherwise, which government bureaucracy came up with the light bulb or the telephone or the phonograph or any of those things?
But let me tell you about my own experience. When I was a grad student, improbably, I came up with two significant discoveries. One was I discovered the RNA polymerase, the enzyme in influenza virus that enables it to replicate. And there's now a drug that's focused on that enzyme called baloxavir that's a common anti-flu drug. You know, that I didn't do the drug development. I didn't get paid for whatever company by whatever company eventually did. Later, I discovered an enzyme called ribonuclease H that's essential to DNA replication. And that's the kind of stuff, pre-commercial, that comes out of NIH, mainly NIH-supported research, and also the National Science Foundation does similar important things. So I'm a great believer in it, but it needs to be vetted. It needs to be vetted by experts who fund the good things and reject the bad things.
And I couldn't agree with you more on that. The problem is when they're signing off on the bad things, even if the bad things are only 10% of it, it kind of suggests that I don't trust their judgment. Dr. Miller, thanks very much. That's Dr. Henry Miller from the American Council on Science and Health, founding director of the FDA's Office of Biotechnology. Hey, if something were to happen tomorrow, are you ready for it? Say a new virus or another shortage, a supply chain collapse. Whatever it is, your health can't wait. And that's exactly why I want to tell you about All Family Pharmacy. It's a pharmacy that puts you first. They're on a mission to make America healthy again by helping families just like yours stay stocked up and ready with the medications they need need close at hand. They're not just selling medication. They're standing up for medical freedom and making sure Americans have access to all the treatments they choose. While others block access, All Family Pharmacy makes it available. They've got ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, methylene blue, mebendazole, antibiotics, even your everyday meds. 200 medications available. It's easy. No insurance, no hassle. Go online, work with a licensed doctor that handles the prescription, and they ship the meds right to your door. If you'd rather be stocked up than caught off guard, this one's for you. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use code Lars10 to get 10% off your order today. Again, that's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use code Lars10 to save 10%. Take control of your health. Coming up, a concerned citizen tries to make a dangerous intersection safer with some chalk lines and ends up facing jail.
The Lars Larson Show. People always ask Lars if he wants to run for public office, like president.
Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get to your phone calls and emails in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers always, 866-439-5277. Now, I have to tell you something. We have talked about gun regulations for a long, long time, but I don't want to talk about guns this time. I want to talk about knives instead. Because over the years, as you've heard, people who are gun enthusiasts like me, Second Amendment enthusiasts, we value our Second Amendment constitutional freedoms. And we joked that if you're going to ban guns because guns are used to kill people, are you also going to ban blunt objects like baseball bats, which actually account for as many murders every year as rifles account for every year in America? And then the joke became, well, are you going to ban knives? Because occasionally you hear about knives being used in a crime. And of course, all of us laugh at the idea of, we're going to ban knives? What's next? Forks? Maybe somebody will be killed with a fork. I don't know. Well, the government in Australia, the Victorian government, will ban the sale of machetes this coming Wednesday. That was announced yesterday by the Premier, Jacinta Allen. They're announcing a ban on the sale of machetes that begins midday on Wednesday. So I guess if you want to buy your machete in the state of Victoria in Australia, you're going to have to do it Wednesday morning or sooner because there's a legislated ban. So their government has actually written a law. It doesn't go into effect till September 1st. But the government in Victoria has decided to ban machetes early. And why? Because four males have been charged. The police are still searching for three others because there was a brawl, believe it or not, at the food court at a local mall. And the people involved in that brawl and the aftermath and the mayhem were using machetes. And what does the Premier of Victoria say? These knives are dangerous weapons. They have no place on our streets anywhere. That is why I will introduce as many laws as it takes to get these dangerous knives off the street. So they say it will be a total ban. It means that Victorians who legitimately use machetes will not be able to buy them legally after September. There will be no exceptions because Australian consumer law does not allow exceptions. So, would you imagine that there are places in Australia where you legitimately use machetes, not to go out and hurt people, but to be able to actually do the work that you do or go through areas of a forest or a jungle that are complicated by, you know, lots of undergrowth? Yeah. And they're going to simply ban them. And in fact, I had to look this up because one of the problematic things in other countries when they've talked about banning knives is, well, I've got a pocket knife in my pocket. I always carry a pocket knife. I have since I was a kid. The blade is about 4 inches long. It would not qualify as a machete. Anything longer than 8 inches is going to be a machete. Well, I can guarantee you that if I went to the kitchen of my home, Tina doesn't trust me with cooking, but I'm very good on cleaning up. But she does the cooking, not because I'm not you know, because I don't share the, you know, the chores around the house. It's because I'm not very good in the kitchen except at cleaning up. But there are plenty of knives in the Larson kitchen that are at least 8 inches long that would fall under this ban in Australia. And I'm trying to understand the logic. You're not going to go after the people who use the knives incorrectly, which is a tiny, tiny fraction of all the people in Australia. You are instead going to ban the knife itself. Now, I've noticed this trend because over the years, we've heard liberals who begin to talk about gun violence. They're not talking about people using a gun to commit a crime because they don't want to focus on the people. If they focus on the people, then you might have to come up with an idea of how you incapacitate violent people. You might, try them for a crime, find them guilty and throw them in jail. That would require you to actually be in favor of jailing criminals. On guns, they say we don't need to control the people using the guns. We need to control the guns themselves. So it's knife violence. It's gun violence. I mean, this is the way they talk. I literally saw a couple of headlines in the last couple of days where they said car crashes through guardrail, man injured. Well, the man, since he was the only guy in the vehicle, was the driver of the vehicle. And we usually would say the man crashed through the barricade, even though literally it was not the man's body that went through the barricade. It was the car that went through the barricade, but he was controlling the car. And there is more and more in journalism almost every single day that suggests that they want to somehow take people out of the equation and say it was a bad gun, or it was a bad car, or it was a bad knife, and ignore the fact that it's actually people doing all of these things. And then you got to ask yourself this. Are Democrats pricing people right out of work with their extreme wage hikes? The Center Square cites the Center for Union Facts, an anti-union advocacy group that ran a full-page ad begging the Los Angeles City Council to not adopt, get this, and we've talked about it on the show, a $30 minimum wage at hotels in the city of Los Angeles. They say the city has already lost 11,000 hotel jobs just last year because they have a growing population but a shrinking number of hotel jobs. And why? Because the government said, we want people who work in hotels to earn a healthy living. Well, $30 an hour, which is $60,000 a year for most of the jobs in hotels. If you're standing behind the desk, if you're checking people in, if you're carrying luggage, if you're cleaning rooms, if you're doing repairs, all of those. All of this includes the Los Angeles International Airport and all of its concessionaires. So when you walk up to order a coffee, you should understand the person behind the counter who's bringing you that cup of coffee is making $60,000 a year to serve coffee. Now, how does that work out for the jobs themselves? Well, the people who work those jobs get a raise until they get a pink slip, and then they have no job at all. But if they were working the job, they'd be making $60,000 a year. That's how crazy this is. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And I want you to consider, this is one of the goofiest stories I've run into. Not the bee is the source. But there's a guy by the name of Kevin Cox. And he lives in Charlottesville, Virginia, a town I've been to any number of times. It's the home of my friend Joe Thomas, who does a great radio show in Charlottesville. And in fact, our program is on Joe's station. And this guy in Charlottesville, Kevin Cox, had noticed there was one intersection that was particularly dangerous to pedestrians. So he went before the city council and he pleaded for them to make it safer before somebody got killed. And what did they do? Well, like they do with most citizens, they completely ignored Kevin Cox. So Kevin said, well, if they're not going to do it, I will do it on my own. He says, if we can't get traffic control cameras and police won't enforce the law, we just have to adapt to physical methods to slow drivers down. So he took a can of spray chalk and he made his own pedestrian crosswalk at the intersection of 2nd Street Southeast and Elliott Avenue in Charlottesville, Virginia. Now, did the city say, hey, Kevin, thank you very much. That's probably going to save some lives. They said no. The city officials said it was an unauthorized infrastructure deployed in the city's right of way. I mean, most of the cities out there can talk bureaucraties. Anyway, he was threatened with jail time for using chalk paint to make his own intersection. Hey, this doesn't happen very often, so you want to jump on it. Brickhouse Nutrition has its Memorial Day sale going on. For a limited time, save 25% on everything with my code Memorial25. That includes Lean, the weight loss supplement that targets the same goals as GLP-1 injections, but without the needles or the prescriptions. Kick off a healthy summer and save big. Go to BrickHouseNutrition.com and use code Memorial25 for 25% off. That's BrickHouseNutrition.com and use code Memorial25.
Donald Trump with a warning to Hamas at the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference.
If you spill a drop of American blood, we will spill a gallon of yours.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. But first, I want to talk to Sophia Hamilton, who is a policy analyst and contributor for the group Young Voices. Ms. Hamilton, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Lars. I'm happy to be here.
So the government came after cigarettes, which I don't smoke, cigars, which I smoke occasionally, and I mean very occasionally, a few times a year. And now they're going to go after nicotine pouches. Are those nicotine pouches actually doing much harm to people? And do they potentially do more good by getting people to switch from things like cigarettes? And why is the government going this direction?
Yeah, so nicotine pouches are a relatively new product on the U.S. market. They've been around for years in the United States, but they've been around in Europe for decades. It's the popular product in Sweden, and it's why the Swedes are a smoke-free country. That means less than 5% of their population is smoking cigarettes, and that's a huge achievement. So these nicotine pouches, which offer popular products like Zyn and On and Milos, they're a very important harm reduction tool. They are these little white pouches that go in the user's gums, and they get the nicotine into the bloodstream through the oral mucosa, which that's all just to say it goes straight into their spit, and they get the rush of nicotine that you would get when you would be smoking a cigarette or hitting a vape. So without the dangers of smoking, you're not getting that combustion anymore. It's actually a lot safer to use these nicotine pouches. So we've seen a lot of state legislators and other members of the federal government in previous administrations going after these nicotine pouches because they're becoming incredibly popular in the United States. And that's caused a lot of concerns, especially as it relates to teens and young adults. But I really don't think it's as big of a deal as some anti-tobacco activists are making it out to be. Because
I want to hear this, Sophia.
I was going to say, we all know that without nicotine pouches, these kids would be vaping, they'd be smoking cigarettes. The government can do whatever they want to try to tell teenagers what they can and cannot do. But that really comes down to their individual parents. And that's how we really need to go about these situations instead of putting these top-down government bans that really just harm the adults who are using appropriately, and not these teenagers who are getting these cigarettes, vapes, nicotine pouches through ulterior methods instead of on the legal market.
Sophia, I've had this kind of, as I said, I smoke a cigar now and then. I've used pouches, and I don't smoke cigarettes. Never. I mean, I've smoked a cigarette or two in my entire life, but I'm older than God, and so, you know, that's what it is. But I've never smoked on a regular basis. I've never smoked a pack of cigarettes. But every time I've had a doctor on, I've asked him, how much harm does the nicotine itself do without the harms of the delivery mechanism, either burning, you know, breathing burn products? And they said, not much. And most of them will say it's maybe 5%, and maybe it's equivalent to, say, the caffeine you get by drinking coffee. And I'm kind of wondering, the secondary question is, once they're done banning this, are they going to move on to coffee? Are they going to move on to caffeine in other kinds of drinks, like soda pops, because there's still caffeine in some soda pops? I don't understand. Is this just all the anti-tobacco folks are running out of things to do, so they've decided to pick new targets to go after? Or what's making all this happen?
I absolutely love that you say that. I always bring the comparison of nicotine to caffeine because at their chemical level, they're very similar. And they have a lot of the same positives and negatives. You know, you get the stomach upset with caffeine that you do with nicotine. They're both addictive. But we've so normalized this coffee culture in America and that we forget that it is a substance. It is a stimulant. But I think that's okay if people want to use caffeine. I know I'm extremely addicted to caffeine, and that's not something I need the government to get involved in. I'm a grown adult, and I can figure that one out myself and what's best for my body. And I think the same goes for nicotine or alcohol or soda, any substance on the market. I'm a grown adult, and I can make that decision for myself. I don't need the government to come down with their paternalistic policies and tell me how to live what's in their mind, a healthy life. And so we saw even back in 2013 in New York City, they were trying to have these soda bans where you couldn't have oversized sodas because we all know that's what all Americans drink every day is their Diet Coke. And that utterly failed. And so I think we've seen this decrease smoking, which the anti-tobacco activists never tell you this, but teen and adult smoking rates in the United States are at a historic low.
Yep.
Practically no one is smoking anymore. We're almost a smoke-free country. And so I think these activists must be so bored that now they need to go after every new product that's really a harm reduction tool. Kids are not getting sick because of Zyn overall. Sure, the product can cause some gum irritation and some stomach upset, but so does caffeine. Caffeine is bad for your teeth. It's bad for your stomach. So many other products on the market are not great for you, but the government isn't banning it. And so I think if we give these activists to let their foot in the door for this government intervention, what's next? And I love that you posed that question because what could be next? We've already seen them go after soda.
They're going to come after
caffeine.
And think about this. Sodas typically are more a kid thing than they are an adult thing. I'll drink a soda now and then, but they're more a kid thing. You say, well, those kids are drinking Coca-Cola that has caffeine in it. You know, okay, you want to ban that next? And they'll use kids as the excuse, even though they're not aiming it just at kids. They're aiming the ban activity at everyone, aren't they?
Exactly. I totally understand if we don't want to have these in school lunch programs. That's completely fine. Kids shouldn't be drinking soda at school on the government's dime. But to tell parents that their kids now can no longer drink soda if they want to at a birthday party, that's ridiculous. The government is not in charge of us. They're not our parents. They're not our doctors. And we need to let people be able to make these choices for their own bodies.
You know what, Sophia? When I was in high school, I used to get kind of sleepy after lunch, 2 o'clock in the or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, sitting in class. I was ready to take a nap. And I loved school. So I was enthusiastic about school, but I noticed lunch plus 1 o'clock. Yeah, I'm getting a little drowsy. I think I probably could have benefited by either a caffeinated soda or maybe a cup of coffee after lunch before I went back to class. My grades might have improved, and it got me thinking, well, get some researcher to see what happens to the grades of kids who drink a cup of coffee at the end of lunch or a caffeinated soda before they go back to class and do an actual academic study and see whether or not it produces a positive result. Sophia, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it. That Sophia Hamilton, who's a policy analyst and contributor for the group called Young Voices. We appreciate your time. Glad to get your emails. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. Stream the show, podcast it, download it, or tell Alexa to play the Lars Larsen Show.
The Lars Larsen Show.
Something big.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I mean, that's a special kind of stupid.
This is the Lars Larsen Show.
I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly, provocative talk radio.
What I say is what I say. And honestly, if you don't like it, I'm sorry.
Lars.
Oh, boys, I'm back.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
No, here's your host.
Wait a minute, I'm talking now, if you don't mind, please.
Lars Larsen.
Welcome back to the Lars Larsen Show. Well, President Trump says that he's going to hold back federal money from the entire state of California if the state fails to stop biological males from competing against girls, real girls, not the trans women or trans girls that the LGBTQ crowd likes to talk about. And in particular, they're drawing attention to one athlete in California known as A.B. Hernandez. We'll have more on him in just a moment. And they want him stopped from competing against actual girls in the state finals. Now, I've had plenty of people write to me and call and say, Lars, why are you making a big deal of this? What is the big deal with trans? Well, here's the big deal with trans. There are young ladies out there who would like to compete in athletics. For many of them, it may in fact be their ticket to a lower cost college education. They might get a scholarship. They go off to college. Perhaps they'll even get a shot at playing in the professional ranks or at least the amateur ranks where you can make a living at it. Well, that isn't going to happen if you make them compete against guys. Guys who now say, but I identify as a girl. And in many cases, A.B. Hernandez is a good example of this. They were rather mediocre male athletes. But the minute they began competing against girls, all of a sudden, they were standout competitors who were setting brand new records as males competing against girls. As long as we have athletics that is divided up by gender classes. Now, if you want to have one big class of all athletes all put together, just accept the reality that an awful lot of the girls are not going to turn in times that are at all competitive with the guys. It's not going to happen, especially in things like track and field. But let me get into that. First, I want to welcome you to the program. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every single day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can vote in our X poll. We put up a brand new poll question every day. You can find it on X at Lars Larson Show and on our website at LarsLarson.com. But before I tell you about Mr. A.B. Hernandez, a biological male and mediocre male athlete who now likes to compete against girls because he wins a lot, let me suggest that a lot of the adults in the room are not paying attention at all. For example, in my home state of Washington State, the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction is headed up by Superintendent Chris Reichdahl. Chris Reichdahl just sits there and gaslights everybody on this issue. He says there just isn't a problem. Take a listen.
You know, they have this false sense that kids are in the wrong locker rooms, which just does not happen. So that's the setup here.
Now, the setup is that we're not hearing about male competitors who are showing up in the locker rooms with the girls. We've had people on the show within the last few weeks. We've talked to Riley Gaines. We've talked to a number of people who are female athletes, actual real biological females who have run into young men who are in the locker room pretending or identifying as women, and they say, yeah, I have a right to be here. You don't have any right to object to that. But Chris Reichdahl wants to act as though he lives in a cave somewhere with no internet access and has no idea what's actually going on in the real world. He says, there aren't young men with biological equipment of young men turning up in the locker rooms of the girls. There are. There are plenty of cases coast to coast of exactly that happening. So what does Chris Reichdahl do? Like any good liberal Democrat, he says it's all Donald Trump's fault.
And now suddenly it's a big issue. So they're after us as a state. They're after my office for enforcing the law. And like we described earlier, it's supposed to be a process where they investigate, grab documentation, make a finding, we get to appeal. They have yet to actually engage us. We have no idea what they're considering an investigation.
Well, except for this. I think that it's fair for President Trump, who controls the money coming out of the Department of Education, although it's very clear that President Trump wants to shut down the Department of Education, and it should be shut down. It should have been actually shut down a long, long time ago. But he's giving the states a chance. He's saying to them, you're doing something that violates Title IX of federal law. You're doing something that violates the civil rights protections that are built into the law to benefit girls. And why? Because for decades, girls were not given much opportunity in sports, not in public school, K through 12, not in college. And the federal law changed a long, long time ago. And it said, you've got to afford them at least equal opportunity. Well, Chris Reichdahl says, if you challenge them, they are going to beat back the challenge.
That's the way it's going to go. The Trump administration's in for a tough go because that's not authentic and it's not good due process. And we'll defeat them.
We'll defeat them. Well, that's brave talk. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is they're finally going to have to cave in because let me give you an example. And that is California. because California right now is the target of Donald Trump. He's saying to California, you can do two things. You can either lose all the federal funding that currently comes to your schools, hundreds of millions of dollars, or you can tell the young men if they want to compete in athletics, they've got to compete against other young men. Consider, as Trump put it on True Social, California, under the leadership of radical left Democrat Gavin Newsom, continues to illegally allow men to play in women's sports. This week, writes Trump, a transitioned male athlete at a major event won everything and is now qualified to compete in the state finals next weekend. As a male, he was a less-than-average competitor. As a female, this transition person is practically unbeatable. This is not fair. It is totally demeaning to women and girls. Again, this is Trump writing on True Social. Please be hereby advised that large-scale federal funding will be held back, maybe permanently, if the executive order on this subject is not adhered to. The governor himself has said it's unfair. I will speak to him and find out which way he wants to go. In the meantime, I am ordering local authorities, if necessary, to not allow the transition person to compete in the state finals. This is a totally ridiculous situation. And I agree with him. It is ridiculous because anybody can see that this is denying girls their opportunity. We already know that there are plenty of young ladies who've been beat in swimming. They've been beat in track and field. And at the Olympics, they've been beat, sometimes beat in the face, by boxers who say that they are girls or women, but they are in fact biological males. And we've seen the result of that. In wrestling, in boxing, in track and field, in swimming, they get beat on a regular basis. And all you have to do is take a look at the numbers. I was never a track and field person. I was a competitive swimmer for a couple of short years. But when you say to a young lady, you can compete, but if you can't compete against somebody who spent the first 12 or 15 years of his life as a biological male, men beat the 4-minute mile about 75 years ago. Women are still not even at the 4-minute mile. If that tells you how that contest is going to go, consider this. This past weekend, the athlete in California known as A.B. Hernandez won the Southern Section Masters meet for the long jump. He will probably go to the state finals unless Donald Trump is successful and unless Gavin Newsom gives in.
Some solid advice from Senator John Kennedy.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I hope you all had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. I want to talk about concealed carry reciprocity, and I have a dog in the fight on this one because I have a concealed carry permit that covers me for a number of states. I have them for my home state. I have them for the state of Oregon, state of Washington, state of five or six other states. But is there nationwide concealed carry reciprocity? If you say, I don't know what that means, let me give you this illustration. If one day you and some friends decide to go on a road trip across America, no matter which direction you're going, do you have to check and see whether your driver's license works in the states that you're going to drive through? No, you just get behind the wheel and go anywhere you want to go. The driver's license is good in all 50 states, 58 if you're an Obama fan. The same thing is not true when it comes to concealed carry permits, although it should be. Is the Congress finally pushing to get nationwide concealed carry reciprocity? John Comerford joins us now, executive director of the National Rifle Association's Institute for Legislative Action. John, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't we have nationwide reciprocity just based on maybe the 10th Amendment, that all the states should recognize those permits as valid, even though, just like driver's licenses, the conditions under which driver's licenses are granted in all 50 states is slightly different from state to state. It's pretty close to the same, but it's not identical from state to state. Why doesn't my carry permit go everywhere in America like my driver's license does?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned driver's licenses because folks out there equate carrying should be just like that, and the fact is it's not. And driving's a privilege. Your right to self-defense comes from the Second Amendment. It comes from your God-given rights, and it's a true right, not a privilege. And we need to fix that. NRA's work to get 29 states in this country to recognize your right to carry a firearm for self-defense without asking for government permission with constitutional carry. We need to extend this where if you cross a state line and you go to one of those blue states that all of your listeners know of, you shouldn't be criminalized for just carrying a firearm for your right to self-defense while having a permit.
Well, and the thing I've never understood is, if I remember correctly, and John, you can correct me on this, but there was a bill to grant nationwide concealed carry reciprocity during Donald Trump's first term when he had a Republican House and a Republican Senate. It had more co-sponsors than you needed for a successful vote in the House. And as I understand it, it got voted on, but then the Senate never took it up or it failed. What happened then?
You're exactly right. Richard Hudson's been carrying this fight for us for a long time now. That was in 2017. The bill passed the House, and then it died in the Senate. We still have a 60-vote threshold in the United States Senate to get legislation through. That's why, if your listeners have been paying attention, there's been some excitement about the reconciliation process and removing suppressors from the National Firearms Act, because reconciliation only requires a 51-vote threshold in the United States Senate. But H.R. 38 has been reintroduced this session on concealed carry reciprocity by Richard Hudson. It's got more co-sponsors than we've had since 2017, and we're working to try to get that through the House right now.
Well, and tell me this. Are any of the Democrats getting on board? Because I have to believe, other than districts like AOC's district in Brooklyn, she is Brooklyn or the Bronx? I can never remember. But you would think that there'd be some Democrats from relatively purple districts or states where they'd say, I'm not going to vote against concealed carry reciprocity. That'll mean trouble for me. I mean, and that's why it seems strange that the Senate didn't just say, let's take a vote on this rather than let it die back then. Why not take a vote on it and get everybody to take a position? Do you want to have, you know, let's move to a final vote on this bill. And when the Democrats vote against it, then we can remind everybody for the rest of time who it was that voted against the idea.
Sure. And there it is a bipartisan sponsored bill as of today. Jared Golden from Maine is the lone Democrat that signed on to co-sponsor this legislation. And you're right. I mean, they need to put this up. They need to take a vote. And then we have them on record as whether you support someone's right to self-defense or you don't. The thing that always perplexes me is if you find Democrats in blue states and sometimes even Republicans in leaning blue states, who they have constitutional carry, or they may they're Democrats in a red state. Excuse me, they have constitutional carry, and yet they don't support concealed carry reciprocity. So that's always the one that perplexes me the most. But luckily, we have 29 states out there that are under that standard, and we're still working to fix that at the state level while Congress moves at a slow pace.
Okay, so given the thin majorities in both the House and the Senate, as you said, you've got plenty of co-sponsors of the House to get this passed. Can it go to the Senate, and can we at least hold them to, let's take a vote, and you guys who want to vote against concealed carry reciprocity, go ahead and do it, and we'll remind your voters of that come election time. Is that going to happen?
Well, that's going to be a big push that NRA makes once we get through with the one big, beautiful bill. The U.S. Senate has their hands full right now with the president's priorities in that big package. And NRA and gunners out there should pay attention, because there's a huge component of that deals with Second Amendment rights and can provide for the biggest win for gun owners potentially in our generation. So as soon as that reconciliation process gets done this summer, there's going to be a full court press to try to get H.R. 38 and concealed carry reciprocity into the Senate and call for a vote.
Okay, so is it likely to get added to the big, beautiful bill and perhaps get pushed through in reconciliation? Or is that going to, would they say, no, that'll complicate things, and then the budget bill and the tax bill won't pass?
Since concealed carry reciprocity doesn't have a revenue nexus, it wouldn't pass what we call Bird rule.
Yep.
The reason that suppressors can be removed from the National Firearms Act through reconciliation is because a National Firearms Act item and that tax stamp you pay and all the registration and things, that's to show the government that you pay the tax. It's not to register a gun or the suppressor. It's to prove that you paid the tax. And it was designed in the 1930s to be a punitive revenue generation mechanism. So that is why it is possible to get suppressors out of the National Firearms Act through reconciliation. But H.R. 38 and concealed carry reciprocity wouldn't fit into that.
Well, and in fact, wasn't it more than punitive? Wasn't it prohibitive? Because as I understand the numbers, I wasn't around in the 30s, but they said you could buy a submachine gun for $200. And they said, but if you want a suppressor, that's another $200 worth of tax. And it literally locked most of America out of being able to afford it at all.
You're absolutely right. That was the entire goal, was to make sure that people couldn't afford to buy these items. However, since the rate hasn't changed since the 1930s, where it was exactly double the price of a Thompson submachine gun,
wow,
in today's day and age, it is a revenue generator. It's a revenue generator at the level of about $1.8 billion over 10 years just for suppressors alone. So it's long past time that that unconstitutional tax is taken away. And I know President Trump will sign it into law, and we're happy to be able to support his one big beautiful bill with this really important component put in there in the House.
Thanks so much for what you do for the ILA and acting as the NRA's arm when it comes to lobbying Congress. And thank you for the time today.
All right. Thanks for having me. We sure have our hands full and a lot of work to do.
Absolutely. That's John Comerford, Executive Director of the NRA's ILA, Institute for Legislative Action. Hey, I've got a little piece of news for you about lean. Lean is something I've tried myself, and it doesn't happen very often, so you want to jump on this. Brickhouse Nutrition's Memorial Day sale is on. For a limited time, save 25% on everything with my code MEMORIAL25. That includes lean, the weight loss supplement with the same target goals of those GLP-1 injections, but without the needles and without a prescription. People are seeing real results, and they love that it curbs the cravings. Check out the website reviews. Also on sale, Field of Greens, the superfruit and nutrition vegetable drink that literally promises your doctor will see the improvement in your health or you get your money back. Whether it's collagen, creatine, or any of their other doctor-formulated products, it's all on sale for 25% off. Kick off a healthy summer and save big while you're at it. Go to BrickHouseNutrition.com and use code MEMORIAL25 for 25% off. Don't wait. The sale's only on for a few days. That's BrickHouseNutrition.com. BrickHouseNutrition.com and use code MEMORIAL25 for 25% off.
The Lars Larson Show.
Constantine Kissin on Hamas.
For years now, many of us have been warning that the barbarians are at the gates. We were wrong. They're inside. There are positives as well. I mean, say what you want about Hamas supporters. At least they know what a woman is.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I am so anxious for the U.S. Supreme Court to finally get to the business of talking about birthright citizenship and settling this issue once and for all. And I staked out a position about 30 years ago. I said, if you're not legally in the country and you have a child, your child is not an American citizen. And I've been told by people over and over again, almost to the point where I get tired of it, although I'm not tired of it yet. They say, well, aren't you clear? The 14th Amendment is very clear. I said, it's very clear, except for the subject to the jurisdiction thereof, which last time I checked, I don't think the lawyers back then said, let's just throw in extra phrases and see how it works out. If they wanted to say every child born in America is an American citizen, they could have. But they put in that phrase, and it was there for some very specific reasons. Art Arthur joins me now, who's a fellow in law and policy at the Center for Immigration Studies. AA, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Lars.
So tell me this, because I want to get right down to Wong Kim Ark, because I think that's at the center of where this is. Wong Kim Ark was, as you point out, a Chinese national born to Chinese nationals who were living legally in the United States about 100 years ago. And the Supreme Court decided, yep, he's an American citizen. But he was born to two people who had the functional equivalent, as I think you've pointed out, the functional equivalent of green cards at the time, although they couldn't become full citizens because they were Chinese and law back then forbade that. But he was an American citizen. And all these birthright citizenship champions today who want to keep illegal aliens and their children in the country, they say, see, Wong Kim Ark. And I said, yeah, and the big difference is his parents were here legally. The parents of the people you're advocating are not. Am I way off base on that one?
No, you're absolutely correct. Wong Kim Ark was born on Stockton Street in San Francisco to two parents who were the 19th century equivalent green card holders. And he'd gone back to China, and he came back to the United States, and he was stopped on his way in, and they're like, he can't be a citizen. The case went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court issued Wong Kim Ark versus United States, which is the case that you just described. Now, that court went, you know, a little bit further than just the facts of the Wong Kim Ark case and, you know, made some grand sweeping statements. But it's important to note, Lars, that when we talk about, you know, statements like that in the law, we refer to them as dicta. You know, it's something that the court said, but it's nothing that's binding law. Nonetheless, for the last 127 years, various administrations have treated the broad sweeping dicta in Wong Kim Ark as if it were law, and that every person who was born here, with minor exceptions for the children of diplomats, are automatically citizens at birth. But honestly, that's not what the case law says, and the case law has never been resolved. I can tell you, if you're driving a truck from Georgia to South Carolina, how many pounds of pressure you need to have in your tires or how big a fish you can catch in the Chesapeake Bay. But I can't tell you who gets to be a United States citizen at birth, who gets all those Medicare benefits, who, you know, gets food stamps, who can be president of the United States. We don't like inconsistency and uncertainty in the law. And so this is an opportunity for the court to resolve the issue one way or the other.
Okay. And let's talk about why they put that phrase in there. It was about slaves at the time, was it not?
It was about slaves, but it was also about Indian tribes who were in the United States. There were a large number of Indians who were recognized as separate nations with respect to the subject of the jurisdiction of thereof. But it was also broader than just those Indian tribes, because there were plainly other individuals in the United States at the time. You know, we keep in mind that law was passed before the Comanches surrendered what they called the Comancheria, which was a largely lawless section of West Texas. So, yeah, I mean, there were a number of considerations that went into it. But here's the key thing to focus on. The 14th Amendment was passed to replace the Civil Rights Act of 1866. And the Civil Rights Act of 1866 said something very similar and was intended to give to reverse the Dred Scott decision and to give status to formerly enslaved people in the United States. And what it said was all persons born in the United States and not subject to any foreign power are citizens of the United States and the states in which they reside. Now, the only reason that they got rid of the Civil Rights Act of 1866 was because the Republicans who controlled Congress at the time were concerned that Democrats were going to come in and just reverse the Civil Rights Act of 1866. And they wanted to make sure that wouldn't happen, so they replaced it with the 14th Amendment. Now, in the course of the discussion, there was no indication that that change in phraseology from not subject to any foreign power to subject to the jurisdiction of the United States made any difference whatsoever. So, you know, that's really a fairly critical issue. And if Congress believed that everybody who was born in the United States was automatically a citizen after those Indian nations went away, they wouldn't have passed the Indian Citizenship Act of 1924, which formally gave Indian citizenship. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there are people's perception of what the law says and what the law actually says, two totally different things.
Okay. And the other thing that I worry about is, let's say you take the current accepted definition of it, which I don't agree with, says anybody who happens to be here drops a baby, that baby's automatically a citizen, whether they're legally here or not. It creates a kind of a moral hazard, I think, because the same reason your wife can't go out and get $50 million of life insurance on you, Art, is because then, you know, she might be tempted for $50 million bucks. She might make Art go away. And moral hazards like that, in this case, the moral hazard is, you say, you mean I could just hop a plane, come into Los Angeles, stay in a hotel for a couple of weeks, drop my child there, then go back to South Korea. And when it's time to retire, I've got this brand newly minted 18 or 20-year-old American citizen who can take mom and dad right off to the United States because he is an American citizen. It sets up exactly that kind of situation for our country, and that's morally hazardous, is it not?
Yeah, and when I was a young trial attorney in San Francisco, one of my first cases involved a woman who had done that four times. She checked herself into a California charity hospital, gave birth, stayed 30 days postpartum, and then went down to Market Street and picked up a passport for the new child. But a lot of those women would come over through that path, 9 months pregnant, ready to give birth. and that overwhelmed the local hospital in Yuma, Arizona. They were $20 million in the red simply based on having to deliver so many children. So the other moral risk is it encourages people to enter the United States illegally just so they can give birth.
That's Andrew Arthur, who's at the Center for Immigration Studies. By the way, just in, Planned Parenthood CEO compensation, you know, that organization that kills almost 500,000 babies every year, paid its CEO almost $1 million last year. And some of that money was taxpayer dollars that helped fund it. Planned Parenthood is big abortion business that profits off baby killing. We have to stop Planned Parenthood, and I have just the team to make it happen. Join me in supporting Americans United for Life. Since their beginnings in 1970, AUL has been involved in every pro-life case presented before the Supreme Court. Their top-tier legal professionals are dedicated to defending life and protecting the unborn. AUL played a critical role in the legal strategy that contributed to overturning Roe, and now they're focused on exposing Planned Parenthood and closing those abortion centers permanently. Americans United for Life has helped save over 3 million kids. I'm looking for 50 pro-life listeners to donate $50 a month to stop this madness. Your tax-deductible donation saves the lives of babies and advances pro-life legislation nationwide. Your help is critical. Donate securely at aul.org/Lars. That's aul.org/Lars. Protect those lives and support Americans United for Life. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Ronald Reagan knew better. Do you?
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they have the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Well, now we've got something else to worry about when it comes to the Chinese Communist Party. It's not just COVID. It's not just infectious diseases. It's not just pharmaceuticals. But now it seems that America's so-called renewable energy transition is hiding a giant Chinese Trojan horse. I want to tell you the details of that because it is fascinating. Imagine this. The Chi-Coms in Beijing say, let's just turn out the lights in the United States. And why might they do that? Well, they might be in a conflict with the United States over, say, an island nation known as Taiwan. They might be in a conflict over trade or any number of other things. And obviously with Donald Trump there, he knows the Chinese. He understands what they're up to. But is America's renewable energy system hiding a Chinese Trojan horse? Let me get into those details in a moment. First, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day. And if you're a naysayer, we love naysayers on this program. For more than 25 years, if any naysayer calls the show, producers know that person goes first in line. Usually, they don't do so very well, and that's okay. But if they're willing to come on, whatever crazy argument they want to make, and ask a few questions, and they're invited to ask questions of me, send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our daily poll question is posted on X at Lars Larson Show. It's also posted on my website at LarsLarson.com. But since this is a conservative show, we ask that you only vote once. If you want to vote more than once, either try a Democrat-controlled election or a Democrat-controlled program. But let me tell you the details of this. Some of China's solar inverters in the United States can and apparently have been controlled from China via rogue communications equipment. That's what U.S. officials told Reuters on May the 14th, just a couple of weeks ago. Some of the large batteries that have come in from China have unexplained cellular radios built into them. Now, this is all Epoch Times quoting Reuters, so I'm giving you the sources on this. I mean, this isn't coming out of space, and it's certainly not coming off some sketchy website. I trust Reuters to a certain degree, although they're a bit left-wing, and Epoch Times I trust all day long. But consider that. Large batteries from China that have had unexplained cellular radios installed in them. Now, why would a battery need a cell radio? PV Technology, which is a solar trade publication, says hackers could remotely disrupt or even switch off solar power supplies if they can control the inverter. And that'll result in power losses, blackouts, or even, in the most extreme cases, damage to energy infrastructure. And how are they doing this? It all comes down to inverters, because most of the solar panels that are coming into the United States are coming in from China and Malaysia. There are a few made in America, but the vast majority are made in Southeast Asia. But when the electricity comes out of those solar panels, it's not coming out as 120 volt AC, which is the stuff you find when you plug things in your house. It's coming in at much lower voltages. There has to be an inverter that switches it so it can be fed into the power grid. And the problem is, in November, some of the inverters in the United States were, in fact, according to Reuters and according to Epoch Times, disabled by people in China. China is the world's single largest exporter of power inverters. Now, as I said, these are the things that either convert power from DC to AC or AC to DC. It depends on what you're running. So, as Reuters or Epic is pointing out, the inverters are considered to be the brains of devices like solar panels, wind turbines, heat pumps, and electric vehicle chargers. So they've got control of all of that. You worry about the United States government taking control of your electricity? How about having the Chinese communists in control of your electricity? The piece in Epoch Times points out the rogue devices are undocumented communications channels that could allow firewalls to be circumvented remotely with potentially catastrophic consequences. That's the source cited by Reuters. Malicious tampering of them in a coordinated manner could pose the risk of blackouts and damage across the United States and Europe. Do you remember when Spain had just finished celebrating in mid-April the fact that they had gone 100% renewable power? And about a week later, lights out. You know, the lights simply went off. And they still can't explain exactly why. They said weather phenomena or this or that. Nobody's actually come up with a sensible explanation. So, as Epic points out, at the whim of a dictator in Beijing, or for something more serious like war over Taiwan, Chinese regime hackers could use the rogue devices to skirt cybersecurity firewalls, communicate back to China, and take down large portions of the U.S. and allied electrical grid. So I want you to imagine this. If we get into a dust-up with China over Taiwan, and China says, United States, keep your distance. Do not defend Taiwan. Well, depending on what you believe, I think that Taiwan is its own little independent country. China takes the view that Taiwan is simply some kind of breakaway republic from the People's Republic of China, you know, the PROC. So, not the Republic of China, which is Taiwan. So imagine if they say, if you don't keep your distance, we're going to turn the lights out. And the lights go out in America. Now imagine what the reaction could be. It could be from an American public that's very angry, says, well, you show those Chinese communists who's in charge. They don't get to turn our lights out. The problem is, if China's the biggest producer of inverters and they're now installed all over the place, how do you go out and remove all those things soon enough to prevent China from, in effect, turning the lights out in the United States? It's a real danger. The European Solar Manufacturing Council says the security risk from China's inverters is systemic. The ESMC called on the European Commission to investigate the risk potential for sabotage and espionage of high-risk manufacturers from China. So imagine this. We've been buying stuff from China forever, at least for the last half century or so, and now they can turn the lights out anytime they like. Imagine what a tool that could be if we got into it with China. Hey, if something were to happen tomorrow, are you ready for it? A new virus or maybe a shortage, a supply chain collapse, whatever it is, your health cannot wait. And that's exactly why I want to tell you about All Family Pharmacy. It's a pharmacy that puts you in number one spot. They're on a mission to make America healthy again, helping families like yours stay stocked up and ready with the medications they need close at hand. They're not just selling medication. They're standing up for medical freedom and making sure Americans have access to the treatments they choose. While others are blocking access, All Family Pharmacy makes it available. They've got ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, methylene blue, mebendazole, antibiotics, even everyday meds, 200 medications available. And it's easy. No insurance, no hassle. Just go online, work with a licensed doctor who handles the prescription. The meds ship right to your front door. If you'd rather be stocked up than caught off guard, this is the option for you. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use my code Lars10 for 10% off. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and code Lars10. Take control of your health.
The Lars Larson Show.